CBSI in the World, I'm John Batchelor. Africa, watching the crisis in the Middle East, the crisis in Europe. Africa, especially Francafrique Africa, in the news these many months because of military takeover of what are said to be civilian governments. Africa, where the jihad, especially ISIS, prospers, but Al-Qaeda is advancing in East Africa. Africa, Francafrique in the West. ECOWAS is the organization that encompasses countries now at risk. ECOWAS is led by Nigeria, the largest and most populous state in Africa, the most powerful, the richest, and troubled. I welcome Gregory Copley, editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs, about Nigeria's troubled election of earlier this year, February of 2023. It connects with headlines that are now in the news. I begin with Nigeria's high energy costs burdens common man. Nigeria seeks $1.5 billion World Bank loan amid fiscal crisis. Nigeria wants to revamp its rail network. Nigeria becomes a carcass. Nigeria crypto usage growing further. Nigeria breaks through bottlenecks with BRI. That's Belt and Road Initiative of significance at this point, discussing Nigeria and its troubles. This week is Belt and Road Initiative gathering 130 nations in Beijing, including, of course, at some point, Mr. Putin to sit with Mr. Xi Jinping. But Nigeria is present, and most notably in the bottleneck said to be broken through by Nigeria, involves the China Harbor Engineering Company. That's a state-operated outfit that moves into the country and doesn't ever really leave. Gregory, a very good evening to you. The troubled election of February of this year complicates all these headlines. The candidates were Peter Obi, popular in urban Nigeria, Atiku Abubakar, popular throughout the country, and Bola Tinubu, the winner of the election, said to be now questioned. Good evening to you. Last week, we spoke of the questions about Bola Tinubu. His very background is questioned, and also the way the votes were counted is questioned. What about the reaction so far in Nigeria to these revelations? Good day to you, Gregory.
Good day, John. And the revelations that we unveiled last week, while not new to a lot of Nigerians, really showed that they responded to the fact that there was international recognition of their issues. I've been inundated, literally, with emails and the site of articles which referred to our broadcast of last week, and these have generated just a massive sense of outrage, particularly as the FBI in the United States prepares to release some of the first 500 pages of its 2,500 pages of activities of Mr. Tinubu when he was in the United States, particularly in the 1990s. So that's now getting enormous coverage within Nigeria, and this is likely to increase dramatically as not only the FBI, but the CIA, the Internal Revenue Service, State Department, and others release information, the drug enforcement agencies involved as well. So that's going to get enormous publicity in the run-up to the Supreme Court hearing about the election of February 25th this year, because as a lot of the Nigerian media is saying, the focus now has to be on the Supreme Court and whether it will fairly adjudicate or whether the seven justices who have been appointed to hear this case will succumb to pressures from the administration, including financial inducements, and also the fact that the Tinubu government is now trying to issue a gag on all domestic comment on these issues, and trying to literally suppress the media. Unfortunately for Mr. Tinubu, the bulk of the discussion is now in social media and is coming also into the country from sources which can't be gagged by the government, including Voice of America and so on, BBC Africa, although the BBC has painted itself into a corner because it used an investigative team to question whether some of the allegations against Mr. Tinubu were fair. And the team of investigative journalists they used were all Nigerian and therefore not believed by the Nigerian population. So the BBC's brief attempt to suggest that the election was safe was ridiculed within the country. So it's an interesting situation, particularly at a time now when Nigeria's debt burden is the highest it's ever been proportionately, and the country is reaching the point where it can't adequately service its international debt. And yet, as you pointed out, it's gone to the IMF seeking another $1 billion-plus in loans. It's at the Belt and Road Initiative looking for further Chinese support. And you mentioned the development of the harbor. And yes, this can have enormous benefits for Nigeria if China can be persuaded to invest further in the country. The Chinese investment in Nigeria has not been that great. But interestingly enough, even if Peter Obi or Atiku Abubakar came into office, they would not cancel their relations with Beijing under the Belt and Road Initiative. So Beijing is staying pretty quiet on this issue. So it's an interesting situation. But now the pressure is on the Supreme Court as it comes to hear not only whether the February 25th election was valid in itself, but the additional case of whether Bolo Tinubu was a legal candidate because he lied on his applications. So you had the one thing where there's a prima facie case that he didn't reach the constitutional level to be declared president, and they should have called a runoff election. And secondly, whether he was a legal candidate because he actually committed perjury and fraud on his election application.
A puzzle, Gregory, at this point, documents in the possession of the United States government. I'm way outside of this, so I'm just approaching it logically from the years of reporting I've done in Nigeria, a very powerful state that's been troubled for some time with internal disputes between the North and the South, with theft, with exploitation of the energy resources during the first decade of this century, and then the presidential election going back and forth between one side and the other, military men who are ill, moving on, always the charge of skimming or corruption and exploitation of the energy resources, the light sweet crude, very critical to the world's fossil fuel needs. However, involving in all of this, my memory is that Nigeria is important to the United States of America. And I recall an embassy, the U.S. embassy being built there, quite spectacular. So the logic is this. If the United States authorities, and you mentioned the FBI and there are other agencies that are involved here from your remarks of last week, if they have possession of Bola Tinubu's inadequacy, I'm using a broad word, it behooves them to move forward with the legitimate choice needing Nigeria to stabilize. Again, I'm approaching from the outside. Isn't that all logical? Do we have any information that the U.S. has moved in some effective way? I understand they're releasing papers, but that's not the same as a statement from the embassy.
No, and the embassy has been very, very quiet on it, largely because they have been warned by the previous government, which was the All Progressives Congress government of President Muhammadu Buhari, that if they said anything, then basically the embassy would be closed down. And although President Tinubu hasn't said the same thing, the implication is there because he's the APC president now. The reality is that the U.S., which could 10, 12 years ago have actually influenced the election by a word from the ambassador or from the Secretary of State, is no longer in that position of influence. And that's the critical decision. So the decision of the United States government to acquiesce to the Freedom of Information Act requests for information on Tinubu, have come a little late. They came after the election when the application for that information was in 2022 before the election. So they're now responding heavily, and one can only assume that they have taken account of the Supreme Court hearing coming up this month and in the coming month or so. So that's actually a statement in itself. Yes, the United States is still critical to Nigeria and Nigerians, and most of the candidates acknowledge that. Tinubu, though, is afraid to come back here, although he was over for the New York General Assembly, which he would have immunity for. He was supposed to meet with President Biden on the sidelines for the of the UN and did not do so because the U.S. decided not to. So that was, again, a virtual statement. We know that the U.S. built this massive fortress embassy in Abuja, the capital in the center of Nigeria, but it's now still building a $300 to $400 million consulate in Lagos. Apparently, the old U.S. embassy in Lagos is not big enough, and so they're building a $300 to $400 million consulate. Now, this is a massive price for a consulate to be, which arguably may not be needed. Oh, and incidentally, it's being built by a Turkish company under subcontract. So it's quite interesting that the U.S. has demonstrated a commitment there, but has shown no ability to have any diplomatic influence.
The additional concern about Nigeria is that it is the leader of ECOWAS. ECOWAS is deeply, deeply troubled and challenged by the flip of governments in neighboring Niger from Nigeria, but Burkina Faso, Mali. We've discussed all this across Africa and the presence of the Wagner Group. That would logically look to be a spur to the U.S. and its allies to get involved. They are at war with Russia. Is that a concern in Nigeria, the advance of Wagner Group on the border of Nigeria?
Yes, it is. And yet all my Nigerian sources, and I go backwards and forwards there, and I was meeting with a lot of them recently, they know that ECOWAS will not intervene militarily, for example, in Niger, where there is a Wagner Group presence, because it's just not feasible. In fact, to get to Niger from Abuja, you have to cross through all of the Hausa and Fulani lands, which border and go into Niger. So this is just not a feasible operation. So the reality is that ECOWAS has become impotent on this issue. We are seeing, yes, an escalation of the Wagner Group presence. But what is more concerning is the presence of the private military corporation of Turkey, which is called Sadat, not to be confused with the former Egyptian president, but that's an acronym for its name. And this is a private military corporation ostensibly offering support to the governments, but in fact has been used for some years as a conduit for illegal transfer of military equipment to radical groups, radical Islamist groups throughout West and Central Africa, and not only there, but throughout Africa as a whole. So the presence of the Sadat private military company in Mali, in Niger, and possibly Burkina Faso is more concerning, and also for the fact that they have been themselves funneling weapons into Nigeria, and not to befriend the Nigerian government, because we see the Turkish government is more concerned about supporting Islamist groups.
And one more detail about Russia's presence. Is there any indication that Russia is in conversation with Abuja or Lagos or any representatives of Nigeria's government or private enterprise? Has the Wagner Group made inquiries?
I don't think the Wagner Group has. Certainly, there's there has been an ongoing legitimate diplomatic connection between Nigeria and Russia over the past decades, and including into the Soviet era. But that doesn't imply a Soviet influence there, a Russian influence there.
Gregory Copley, editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs. Questions raised about the current president of Nigeria. When we come back, what does this look like going forward, what about the Supreme Court making decisions about these troubled matters? This is CBSi in the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBSi on the World with John Batchelor.